From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Imagine you have a new company that makes toys. And you know, it's a tough marketplace out there. There are a lot of competitors and endless options for kids, and you're just trying to get your first hit. And then, oh my God, you've got it. You meet with Walmart, you pitch a toy, and they're like, we like this. No, we love this. No, we love this so much that we are going to buy 2.2 million of these things. So now you're thinking, so you make the arrangements, you spend the money to produce all the toys, and then Walmart is like, oh, actually, sorry, guys, we don't really want these.
So they canceled 1.9 million pieces that we had now made and financed.
This is Nick Mowbray, who at the time was a very disappointed toy maker.
And you got to remember, I'm this young kid at this stage, having no idea really what we're doing.
So what on earth would you do in this situation? I mean, you're just starting out. You have really no power here. And now you're about to have no money and a lot of toys, like 1.9 million unwanted toys that you just made and have nobody to sell to. It's a nightmare. But seen another way, it's also a hell of a learning experience, because moments like these are what made Nick into the guy he is today. Nick is the co-founder and CEO of Zuru, a multi-billion dollar toy company that makes some of the most popular toys in the world. Buncho Balloons, Sparkle Girls, Pets Alive, X-Shot, Smashers. Anyway, it's a lot. But it all started with some gigantic missteps as Nick and his siblings stumbled their way into an industry they didn't really understand. Nick says he has a million stories like the one I'm telling you about Walmart, but I want to just narrow in on this one specific case study. How does a young company get into a terrible situation, and what do they learn from it that enables them to thrive later? That is what we're going to talk about today. It is a tale of international intrigue. It involves David Beckham, and it helped shape one of the major players in the global toy industry. So it's all coming up right after the break. I want to tell you about this cool show I discovered. It's called Small Business Revolution Main Street. It's a business makeover show with tons of awesome advice. What I love about it is that they do it all with heart, not the hyped up drama you usually find on TV. Ty Pennington, the renovation guy, is on it, and Amanda Brinkman, this marketing guru from Deluxe. Definitely check it out. You can watch it on Hulu, Prime Video, or smallbusinessrevolution.org. And now, our next sponsor. It's open enrollment time. Of course, that is decision time for healthcare coverage, or as office workers nationwide think of it, oh God, show me how much more you've jacked the price on my deductible. But it is also the perfect moment to reassess your life insurance needs. To properly provide for their families, most people need 10 times the life insurance coverage that they get through their jobs, which means that your employer life insurance is probably leaving you underinsured. That's where Policy Genius can help. Policy Genius is the easy way to shop for a life insurance plan that's not tied to your job. In minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and red tape, and the life insurance you buy through Policy Genius stays with you even if you leave your job. So, when you're looking at your workplace benefits this month, make sure to double check your life insurance options, then go to policygenius.com to get quotes and apply in minutes. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance. All right, we're back. So first of all, how does a young kid from New Zealand get involved in the global toy business to begin with? The answer is it all started at the school science fair. When Nick's older brother, Matt, was like 12 years old or something, he created a model hot air balloon kit that won an award at the science fair. And after that, the brothers always played with this idea. They'd make them in their garage and sell these hot air balloon things door to door. And they always thought there could be something bigger here. So as young men, they decided to just go for it. Nick was 18 and Matt was a few years older, and they quit school and moved to China to make toys. And you might think, like, wait a second, can you just move to China and make toys? And the answer is, yeah, I guess, but it's not easy.
We flew to Hong Kong, had no money, had no contacts. We slept in the bushes outside Hong Kong airport on the first night because it was too expensive to get a hotel. And I remember we were trying to sleep inside the airport. Those bright fluoro lights were too bright, so we went and tried to sleep in the bushes. And then we got attacked by mosquitoes all night. And then from there, we went up into China. And we sort of just had to kind of work out what we were doing. We really had no idea. We made one contact sort of over the internet who said she'd show us around. So we moved to a small place called Shantou to begin with, basically in the middle of nowhere in China.
Anyway, their sister eventually joined them and they found this correct place in China to set up shop. And they had a cousin come over to help them weld together a production line, and they bought some injection molding equipment. And anyway, it's a long story, but eventually they set up and they say, great, time to make some toys. But at first, they really had no idea what to do, make what toys. So they figured a good place to start was to just look around online for what was popular and then do that.
We were looking online and we found a couple of cool products that we thought were really neat. One was with this Night Frisbee, and this other one was called this Money Gobbler. And thought, oh, those are cool. Let's kind of work out how to make those.
When Nick said this to me, I thought, and maybe you're thinking the same thing, that sounds like an intellectual property violation, right? Which I guess is appropriate for manufacturing China, but still not cool. And don't worry, Nick is about to learn this too.
We started manufacturing these two products, and I went off to our first trade show, which was New York Toy Show and Javits Center there in New York. And I'd managed to sell them to this distributor called Schilling. And he'd put these two products, you know, on his booth on display. And I was there sort of willing to sell them to anyone that would come by. But within the first day, this guy came screaming onto the booth. And this was my first learnings around IP. He came onto the booth and he started yelling at Dave, who owned the distributor, saying, you know, get these products off the booth. They're a copy. They breach all our patents. And I'm sitting there, I have no idea what's going on. But Dave comes up to me. He's like, Nick, you need to remove this Frisbee from this Night Frisbee from the booth. So I was like, okay. So I packed it all up, but I was still okay because I had this Money Gobbler to sell.
You can guess what happened next. The Money Gobbler woman caught wind of this too and started yelling at him. And this is how Nick discovers that he can't just rip off other people's toys. He's going to have to make his own. So, lesson learned. Now let's flash forward a little bit later and we get into the story I started telling you in the beginning of this episode. How did Nick get a monster order from Walmart only to lose it all? Well, it started innocently enough. And by the way, this is back in the early 2000s. So just to set your expectations. Nick was in London and he found a company called Matchmaster. They were making these little digital football games that were like, you remember Tamagotchi, the pocket-sized digital pet? It was this very basic device with a grayscale screen that showed a little creature and you'd take care of it. You know, early technology stuff. Anyway, Matchmaster was making the sports equivalent of this thing. So instead of caring for a creature, you'd care for like a soccer player. You'd feed him and do different drills and then play against other people with the same device. And Nick was super into these things, just saw a lot of potential there. So he started talking to the guy at Matchmaster about a partnership.
I remember talking to him and saying, well, maybe, you know, we're in China, we could help you manufacture this thing. Maybe we should team up. And there was conversation around David Beckham is moving to the LA Galaxy to play football. I think it was in a year or two. Maybe we should try and get the David Beckham license and then go and sell this thing in the US. And so we agreed and we decided to team up to do this.
It's a deal. They go for it. Now, next thing, they contact Simon Fuller, who most people know from the original American Idol, but back then was also managing licensing for David Beckham, and Simon's into the idea. So Nick and Matchmaster pay Simon Fuller and David Beckham $1.5 million, that's US dollars, so that they can make this David Beckham Tamagotchi-ish thing. Then they take the idea to a buyer at Walmart, and you know what happened there. The buyer doesn't just say yes, the buyer says, hell yes.
She decided to place an order for 2.2 million pieces of this product, which equated to about 29.5 million US dollars. So you got to put this into perspective. I'm super young. We're sort of trying to sell product in the few thousands of dollars at this point. And suddenly we get this order for 29.5 million US dollars for this David Beckham Matchmaster Tamagotchi. And so I'm like, wow, okay, this is crazy. We need to try and make this thing.
Walmart provides Nick's company, Zuru, with an irrevocable letter of credit, essentially guaranteeing that they'll buy all this stuff. And although Zuru is doing some manufacturing, it doesn't have the scale for this kind of order at the time. So they had to find a manufacturing partner and then ask the partner to finance the order. And the partner said, okay, so long as Zuru signs the irrevocable letter of credit over to them, which Zuru did. So now it's go time. Time to make all of these things. All 2.2 million of them.
They're buying all the LCD screens, all the PCB boards, you know, the little motherboards, injection molding all the cases, 2.2 million pieces of this whole product. And then I get a call from Walmart and they say, oh, we need to reduce the order.
At first, Walmart says that they want to reduce the order by about a million pieces. And that super sucks, but Nick crunches the numbers and realizes that they'll still be okay. They can make the 2.2 million, sell about a million to Walmart, and still eke out a tiny profit. But then Walmart calls back and says, oh, actually, we want to take this order down to 300,000 units. And now, okay, first of all, can Walmart legally do this? It's unclear. I mean, they'd signed a document saying that the sale was guaranteed, so technically maybe they can't really do it. But, you know, come on, it's Walmart. It's the biggest game in town. And if Zuru is this tiny company that ever wants to work with Walmart again in the future, then, you know, it sort of has to play ball. So the options here are limited. What's legal isn't really the relevant question. And now Nick is in total freakout mode. He starts begging and pleading with Walmart, like, please, please do not do this to us.
And they were sort of like, no, this is sort of a mistake. It's far, but the commitment's way too big.
As it turns out, the buyer at Walmart had just made a giant error and she was fired because of it. And then in a terrible, tragic turn, the buyer's significant other dies in a car accident. So now everything is just a chaotic, emotional mess for everyone. But somehow, perhaps because he was young and inexperienced and played the cards right, Walmart eventually took pity on Nick and increased the order back to about 800,000, which at least gave Zuru some breathing room. Whew. Except...
getting a product on shelf is one part of the battle. The next part is obviously making it sell. If it doesn't sell, then you've got, you know, another big problem on your hand. And this product just would not sell. It was like concrete on the shelf. It was a $25 retail and they discounted it to $20 and then $15 and then $10 and then $5. And then I think in the end, from what I heard or understood, they ended up selling it to like some of the dollar stores for like 50 cents to try and actually get rid of it.
Walmart wants Zuru to compensate them for the loss on the markdown, which is standard in retail, but Zuru doesn't have the money to do that. So now this frayed relationship is busted.
And so basically then that process, we were banned from working with Walmart for, I think, maybe 3 or 4 years.
So, all right. I mean, pretty tough situation, right? That is the end of it. There's no like time when it turns around nice and fast and everyone wants those David Beckham things. They just didn't. And so now, I asked Nick to do a postmortem on this situation. Like, look back and say, what did you learn from the whole disaster that helped Zuru become the multi-billion dollar company it is today? And he had a couple really interesting insights. The first is this. Hey, that ban from Walmart, not actually so bad.
It was probably a good thing because I don't think we were ready at that point really to work with them anyway. We were super young, super naive, didn't really know what we were doing.
Which is to say, companies should take their time. You do not need to work at the highest levels immediately. Like, go work your way up. Get to know the rules of the road, the way things operate. Develop your business so that you're really ready for the big show. Because if you get there too early and try to take advantage of a moment you're not prepared for, you could harm your future self. So now Zuru had a few years to settle down and really figure it out. That's not so bad. And here's lesson number two.
I thought, oh, maybe just 2.2 million units of this product is normal. So one of the big lessons that came out of it was, no, it's not.
You've got to know your marketplace. And Nick did not know his marketplace back then. So when Walmart ordered 2.2 million pieces, Nick thought back then, great. But what he should have thought is, oh, something is wrong here. This is not the way that Walmart acts, and we need to do more due diligence on this deal before going forward. Because here's the thing, and let's call this lesson number three. Back then, Nick thought that selling the product to a retailer was the win. But that was not the win. The win is when the consumer actually buys the product from the retailer. And Zuru was totally unprepared for that.
One of the big lessons for us was that as a supplier, I mean, the success of something falls on us, essentially.
They had no marketing. They weren't really thinking about branding either. And very importantly, they weren't really attuned to the toy marketplace. When Nick looks back at this moment now, he sees all sorts of problems. For one, the Tamagotchi trend was already waning by the time they released this David Beckham toy. You cannot be reactive to trends. If you just wait and see them in the marketplace and then try to jump on them, you are definitely going to be late. And this was a lesson that Zuru took a while to really learn. After this Walmart debacle, for example, Zuru started developing toys that would, you know, sell just fine, but retailers would never order more of them. And at first, Nick thought, oh, I guess that's just how the toy biz works. But no, that is not how it's supposed to work. The problem was that Zuru wasn't staying ahead of trends. It was catching them at the end. So one sale and it's over. Now, over time, Zuru has developed a far more sophisticated system for tracking trends early and then iterating on them. And I asked him for an example.
We launched a line called Rainbow Corns 2 years ago. And we effectively went out and we looked at every trend that was happening in the marketplace in girls. So the unboxing trend was huge in terms of kids wanting a surprise element to the toy. We were looking on YouTube at giant surprise eggs, and these giant surprise egg videos where kids were sort of breaking them open had over 1 billion views, many of them. We were looking at unicorns, were obviously hot. We were looking at sequins, which were really hot about a year ago, year and a half ago, sequins. And so we decided to create this brand that combined all of these hot girls' play patterns at the time and all of these trends that were happening.
And if you haven't heard of Rainbow Corns, let me tell you something. They are huge. Go Google it. I had to. It's ridiculous. You'll just get an endless supply of videos of people opening them up.
We have the brand new Rainbow Corns from Zuru. If you guys have not seen these yet on the internet, you are going to see a whole bunch of them because they are so, so awesome.
Why is anyone watching this stuff? I genuinely don't understand it. But whatever. Guess that's a question for another time. So after hearing all of this from Nick, let's take another look back at that Walmart deal. Zuru was a scrappy toy company that scored its first huge deal with Walmart, and then Walmart pulled out. Whose fault was it? You could say it was Walmart. I mean, they did make the error, but really, as Nick looks at it now, he believes it was his fault. He didn't understand the marketplace, didn't understand his role in the marketplace, and wasn't developing toys that had a long-lasting place in that marketplace. He had set himself up to fail. And at first, that's what happened. But lessons have been learned and processes have changed, and Nick and his team spent years reworking their company and years pitching Walmart again, and finally they got back into the mega retailer's good graces. Now it's pretty much all upside. Zuru makes 600,000 toys a day. They have 5,500 employees and 54 acres of factory space spread out across 18 offices around the world. And now that they've redefined the toys they make, they're redefining the company they run.
I've set up a new company called Zuru Edge, which is building new age data-driven consumer products, which is growing incredibly quickly.
Here's the big takeaway for me. This David Beckham thing could have killed Zuru, but it didn't. And that's because Zuru chose to look at the situation not as thinking about themselves as victims and not getting into a panic. Instead, they saw it as a reminder of the moment that they were in. It was an early moment for the company, a learning moment, a moment to step back, rethink everything, and then keep going. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.